This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
A lot of people have not had the time to express their project or to talk about the environment, and it's a tricky thing to have conversations about, right? So we get even less exposure to those types of conversations, right? So you're a beginner, basically.
Welcome back to season two of the Tread Lightly podcast. If you thought season one was just about recycling, hugging trees, think again, because this time we're taking things up a notch, talking about everything from how community shapes our planet to why faith might just have something to say about the environment, and even digging into the quirks of human behaviour.
I think we all realised quite quickly that the environmental conversation is way too big to keep simple. So we're diving in headfirst at the deep end. Buckle in, because this season we're going to get real. Let's go.
Let's do this. Hello and welcome back to this episode where I am so excited because Leo Batchelor has come to the studio to chat to me because Liz is off on her hollybobs today. So it's me and you. Hello, girl. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Your title is presenter and media coach.
It is.
I want to hear all about that. Tell me all.
Where do you want to start?
Well, right from the very beginning. Like, how did you, what is that? How did you become to be that?
My passion's always been, as a kid, helping people share their ideas.
Uh-huh.
Mainly because as a kid, I was creative and had all these ideas and wanted to do all this stuff. And I struggled to share my ideas. And I always thought it was because of me and I couldn't communicate very well and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, there's other, you know, it was more about, yeah, when a creative idea is really hard to explain and express. But anyway, I always had that concern. And so I always wanted to help other people who I saw that were really passionate about whatever it was that they were, share their ideas, really. So that's kind of was the thread that runs through everything I do. But then I didn't realize that at the time. And so I pursued design, kind of I did art, but I didn't study it. And so I went down like the design engineering route.
Wow.
But then enjoyed it, but also it's really slow. Like, you know, products take years and years, and I'm quite a like
are you like a now person
now. Yeah, that's why I'm good in like advertising, because everything's like yesterday. But realizing that that design element and that engineering side was about helping and recognizing, oh, there's all these amazing designers and engineers, and they can't share their idea, therefore no one's ever going to buy it. And kind of being a bit sad about that there's all this potential locked up in people that they can't get out, really. So my kind of journey was like, okay, didn't want to study in, like, didn't want to work in engineering. I worked in selling sports equipment for a bit, which was fun because I was into sports, but wasn't kind of fulfilling long term. I worked in stop motion animation.
What,
which was so cool,
that?
Like Wallace and Gromit.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was awesome.
And what did you do with that?
So I was a producer. So basically I was, well, I started off in sales and like the business development.
Yeah.
And then they got that, it was like with a tiny company in Margate called A plus C Studios. And, you know, at the time they were really small. So a startup, I was going out to London to try and peddle these animations. And when I look back, I'm like, they were so basic at the time. But as I got jobs in, they then had to have someone to like look after it and like manage it, which was where I then became a producer, because I was doing both. And naturally I'm more of a producer. I'm a project manager, right? That's what my degree taught me for.
Oh my gosh,
but
I would love to
technical
have your
stuff.
Brain. I am like the complete opposite of that.
Well, it's, I don't know, for me that it's the in between of, you can see the creative side, but you, and that was like my background, kind of creativity and like the engineering, but also seeing the people side. And okay, great, we want to pitch this idea to someone, but we've got to explain it in the way that makes sense. So it's also being able to talk that language. And I guess I found that I could sit in the middle. And that's essentially what a producer does. It's like organizing, but it's also a bit of client management, a bit of getting the money, all this kind of thing. And then I left there. And I guess from it, realized how many people are commissioning video and they don't actually know what their message is or what they want to say. And it's, you know, they go to marketing agencies and the agency will ask them, you know, who's your audience? What's your message? What's your USP? And people will be like, I don't know. So that was, I guess, where I started my freelance career, was helping people work out, small businesses and entrepreneurs and startups work out, what is it you actually want to say? Because most people don't know. And the more I went into it, the more I realized most people don't, not, it's, it feels wrong to say they don't know. They do know, they feel it and they can sense it, but they, it's sometimes finding the right words, or if it's a career or a project you've been working on for 6 months or 6 years, how do you condense that down to like one line, your elevator pitch, for example, that nails it? And along around that same time, I set up a TEDx event, and that was kind of with the same idea. All these amazing people, academics, startups, you name it, everyone and anyone, and they were doing amazing things, but no one, they didn't necessarily kind of grab people's attention. And so it was like helping them to work out how to do that. And that for me is what TEDx is about, is like going, you've worked your whole career on this. Now tell me the highlights in less than 18 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Which is tough. And what people struggle with is not being able to say stuff and not knowing some stuff to say, but what's the thing of value in what you've got to say,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
You know, let's say 10 years of experience, what's the bit that's going to make that difference to someone and that they actually want to listen to? Because a lot of people have, they'll get imposter syndrome about speaking, not because they're not qualified or they don't have the experience, but because they don't, they haven't tested it out enough to know that people will go, oh, I love that, that was really good, or which bit they go, I love that. And therefore, you're always in this doubt. And that's why people get nervous a lot of the time. But to answer your original question, I've given you a very long story around this.
No, I love it. I love it. It's really good to get people's background into like how they've ended up where they are, because it gives you a whole context then, doesn't it? Yeah, go on, sorry.
Yeah. So the presenting was me, all of that journey. And I talked a lot, you know, about other people, but often it was all my own journey as well, because I wasn't clear about what I wanted to say. I didn't know my value as an entrepreneur. I didn't know my value in like what I've got to offer that's different. So it was finding that for myself. And that's where me being a presenter was part of that journey. It was also an element of, I was doing a bit of coaching for a while, I still do, but helping people work out what their message was, but realizing people don't want a coach, or sometimes they're scared to go to a coach. Whereas they want to be interviewed and they want to share their message. And a presenter is basically, in my approach anyway, is a very gentle coach that just gives them the space and time to talk and share and is interested in what they've got to say and lets them express that. So that was how the presenting developed. And then the media coaching was, yeah, helping others to be able to do the same thing, basically.
And that's how we connected, because I attended one of your courses that was funded by KCF, Kent Community Foundation.
Yes.
And it ran, I think, started in January, ended in, I want to say, March?
Yeah, it was March, yeah.
It was a three-month thing. And it was so valuable to me. And I sat there, I think pretty much everybody sat there each week just going, you are the right person to deliver this, because you have got the right amount of energy and enthusiasm and belief in people and interest in people that makes you then go, oh wait, someone's actually listened to me, like I do think I do have something to say. Whereas a lot of people went there with not a lot of confidence and not a lot of experience in speaking and being able to share that message. I can't remember how many spoke at the final event in March, but there was a good handful of people that all stood up in front of a whole room of people and explained kind of like the work that they were doing and shared their message. And I don't know for you, but seeing people on that journey and then sitting there at the end kind of going, I've been a part of that. Yeah. I've been a little part of that jigsaw to enable that person to do that. That must feel really good for you, does it?
Yeah, definitely. And thank you very much, for saying, because that's the foundation, I guess, of what I want to give people is, beyond any advice, support, tips, it's about just giving people a safe space to be able to share what they're passionate about. And when you do that, they have the confidence to open up. And when they have the confidence to open up, even if they're not clear, and some people will talk and talk, and I know I can do that for sure, but you have to go through that to find the stuff that's important. It's like if you want to, you know, find the shears in the shed, for example, you normally, and you've got a shed full of stuff, you've got to pull everything out to be able to find that one tool at the back, right? And that one bit that's really important and is of value in that moment. So, and yeah, you're right. That's my favorite thing, is seeing other people have that confidence to step up, but very much to own it, and it for all to come from them, but knowing, because I try to avoid giving advice in inverted commas, like in a direct, in the traditional sense, because I know it doesn't work. You know, when you say, oh, you should do this, people don't do it. Whereas you ask them questions and help them work out what they should do for themselves, that's when they do it. And so that's, for me, how I like to approach things, is just let people find their own stuff and I can just create the space for it. And that's the most important bit.
And that message was really strong throughout the course, I think. And even if you see any of your content online, it's very clear that you are like, I'm not an expert. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to just like hold your hand on this journey for you to work out what works for you. Because yeah. You say this often, like, what works for me is not going to work for you because we're two different people.
Yeah.
But you give people the confidence to be able to work out what that is for them. And I think that's such a beautiful gift that you should be really proud of that.
Thank you.
Really proud of that. So how does this link with environmental stuff then? Because the coaching course that you did with KCF was all around environmental issues and for people to be able to share that. But how does your work link with environmental stuff? What's all that about?
So I see that, you know, sharing ideas is hard. Public speaking is hard. That's the space.
Amen.
I work at, yeah. And it's already hard enough as it is. It's even harder if you've got to share an environmental idea or project or thing like that, right?
And tell me why that is, because you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
because a few reasons. One, and this goes for both ideas in general, but it's even more so when it comes to environmental stuff, is it's brand new, often for the individual, right? You know, obviously climate change and these issues are not new, but for a lot of people, it's new, both for someone hearing it, but for the person speaking it. And therefore, a lot of my work is based on the fact that you're not bad at speaking and it's not that you don't know what you want to say, you just haven't said it yet. And a bit like riding a bike or driving a car, you wouldn't expect to just jump in and know how to do it straight away. So a lot of people have not had the time to express their project or to talk about the environment. And it's a tricky thing to have conversations about, right? So we get even less exposure to those types of conversations, right? So you're a beginner, basically, in terms of your vocalizing of it, which is number one, why it's hard. Number two, I guess it's obviously for some, a controversial topic. It's also, and you know, ignoring the deniers, there's, for a lot of people who are, you know, think we should be doing stuff, but they maybe don't agree with activists. And so as the speaker and the person with the idea, I've had a lot of people say, I'm worried about being an activist, or people thinking I'm an activist, or saying I'm not an expert at this, therefore I can't be I don't know how to talk about this. I don't feel, it's imposter syndrome, right? So that's another reason why people get scared, is because they don't know how to say it in a way that connects with people. And then I guess linked with that one, like another reason is, and I certainly felt this, I don't like telling people what to do because it doesn't work, right? And you tell someone you shouldn't be driving your car, you shouldn't be eating meat, they're going to tell you to do one.
They're going to get a backup, aren't they?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So what works is setting an example. But in a lot of the content we see and hear, and what we're used to being exposed to, is someone who's an expert or a teacher. So you get told what to do, you watch content and it's giving you knowledge and it's giving you top tips, which can be useful in some settings, but people automatically go to, when you ask them, right, let's do some videos for your project, they go to, oh, I have to tell people what to do or give them advice. And it's like, you don't at all, but sometimes you have to find, okay, what could you say? How would you say it if you were saying it to a friend? Okay, that's how we're going to approach it, rather than, here's my top tips on how to be more environmentally friendly. Because that doesn't work. So it's all of those nuances between what do you want to say and you being comfortable with saying it. And then I guess actually another one I didn't mention, but another one is, how do people hear it in a way that doesn't get their backs up and that they actually get value from and that is relevant and right at the time? And that's a tricky thing, because no one has worked this out yet, have they? No. Like, governments haven't worked it out, big organizations, charities haven't worked it out. Otherwise we would have solved this. So the final thing being, no one has the answer in how to communicate these messages, because we would have sorted it out. So yeah, don't feel bad if you struggle to talk about environmental projects or anything like that, because no one else has got it.
And one size doesn't fit all, right?
Yeah.
So like one message is not going to you know, reach the masses, because everybody hears and sees things completely different. And we've had scenarios where we've said something and three different people have interpreted that in like in three different ways. And that stuff fascinates me, because you're like, wow, it come from this place and actually it's been interpreted in, you know, in three different ways. But I guess that's life, right? And we're all just, we're all just people that have got our own, we come with our own stuff, and and therefore it adds a...
And that's where I think a lot of, again, like another, I guess, foundational thing in terms of how I think, you know, how I like to help people is exactly as you said there. You say it to three people, they'll take it differently, but we get so caught up in what's the best way to say it.
Yeah.
But actually, if you say it and have three people respond, you realize they completely got it differently. Therefore, oh, I can let go of this perfectionism of trying to get it right, because they'll hear what they hear, not what you say. But you can also learn and get find the nuances, like, oh, that person, okay, they've got that background, or they're that type of audience. Oh, okay, so for them, this works. But for that other person, something else works. And you can find the nuances both that work for you, but also work for others, and particularly different groups.
And it's really interesting what you said about some people don't want to have a voice in the environmental sphere and then worry about, oh, will people think I'm an activist? Will people think... And we've had that actually a lot of times. Our town is huge, big, and so therefore it's really diverse, and we've got a whole load of people that are involved in this conversation locally around what they want to do to protect the environment. Some people want to be really noisy because that's where their gifting is and where their calling is, to gather people to go to protests and to be able to have their voice heard. And then other people could think of nothing worse than that. And so it's trying to have a platform for our town where everybody has got a space to be able to do whatever feels comfortable for them. And we've seen that when we have like family events, or when we do our green drinks, which is like a regular event, or when we go up to London and put our voice to big stuff, there are different people that come in on that journey. And I think that's wonderful, because then people go, okay, well, I don't feel comfortable over here, but this is a bit of me, and I feel like I can make a difference over here. And I think that the more that people can kind of go and find their place and find their people that they can do that with, I think is really good. Because I, some of the stuff that you're doing, you go into schools that I've seen, and you kind of like working with students, and even like primary, I think primary schools, I think I saw you
a little piece.
And that must be really good for you and really exciting to be able to get them to kind of share their message. So it's not just about adults, is it? You're being able to like empower younger people. How do you feel about that sort of stuff?
I think, yeah, that people always talk, and whenever I'm doing an adult based thing, there's always that conversation of how do we get young people involved. And I guess I'm kind of a bit torn and split. Like, on one hand, I hear, you know, a lot more around, you know, and you, like the Greta Thunberg stuff, and you see and you kind of think, oh, okay, young people really do care, and you see videos or you hear stuff from like young eco champions. But then on the other hand, I've spoken to people and where they just don't care. And is that just a teenage mentality, really? And it's also, so I think for little kids, like primary school, it all so much depends on what and how they're receiving it and how their teacher is. And I guess it's like anything, your, especially at that age, your teacher or the person imparting the knowledge is hugely important, isn't it? Like, if they're interested, you're going to be interested because they're passionate and you feed off that. Whereas if they're not, you're not. I mean, you think back to school, what were the lessons you liked? Normally the ones where you liked the teacher, or when the teacher had a certain way of delivering it, that you connected it.
I can literally name you every favorite teacher from every single school that I've been at. Can you do the same?
A few,
Because you just connect with them, don't you? So therefore, like, I have an absolute love for geography. Exactly. Not because I particularly like the subject, but because I connected with that person. And I think that, like, in our context, in communities, that's our main goal, is to be able to connect with people on that level where they go, yeah, I get it. Because you've got that relationship with people that you can kind of then share it at that sort of, at their level.
Yeah, and I think, and going back to your point around having things at different levels for different people to be interact with in their own way, or their own, not say level, but their own context. But also that relates to, you know, okay, you could say, well, you need to be enthusiastic to engage people, but actually some people want to have a moan, and therefore someone else who wants to be pessimistic, great, they're the right person to have that conversation with, that right person. So yeah, it's like, you know, it's a same old that we hear a lot, but everyone needs to be part of the conversation, even if it's to say, I don't agree, or on my wish list of something I'd like to do is like be a podcast or interviews with people who I guess wouldn't consider themselves in any way on this journey and are not really interested, but to find out what they actually think and why they think, because, you know, having a chat with a family member and who I'd kind of, you know, his kind of response had always been quite like, oh, not interested, like, good for you, if you want to do it, that's fine, but it's not me. And then having that conversation, realizing that it wasn't that he wasn't interested and didn't care and disagree, it was more he didn't think the onus should be on individual responsibility, and, you know, you going and buying your refilled vegetables, what's that going to do? But he thought it should be on legislation. It's like, oh, so you do care,
but you just think
it's, yeah, in a different way. And suddenly, but they also think, well, that's, but there's nothing I can do about
takes
that.
Takes it away from me, yeah.
So I think more people do care. They just don't, I don't know, that maybe they care, but they can't, there's no obvious action that they can take. And so the people that we see and hear are those that can take more obvious action, like activists and things like that, because it's more tangible. Whereas someone who doesn't believe in that and has a different way, they don't have an outlet.
Are you tired of the same old chat about saving the planet? You know, like the reduce, reuse, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's time to shake things up, because season two of the Tread Lightly podcast is here and we're diving deeper than your recycling bin.
This season, we're talking about community, faith, and yes, even why humans behave so weirdly sometimes when it comes to conversations about the environment.
Oh my gosh, they do. But there's no boring lectures here, so just real talk. Tough questions and a little bit of banter along the way, because let's face it, we all need to lighten up when we're trying to save the planet, right?
So if you're ready to stop tiptoeing around some of the big environmental stuff, get real and join the conversations. Come Tread Lightly with us.
Catch season two of the Tread Lightly podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, like now. We've talked an awful lot on this podcast about speaking with people that have got different belief systems to us and that come from a completely different background. And I think it's really healthy to be able to surround yourself with a whole bunch of different people. I have a lot of people in my friends and family circles that do exactly that, which, yeah, is, this is great for you, babes. This is well good that you're trying to do all of this eco stuff. And some might say, oh, you're a bit of a hippie, because that's another kind of like label that you kind of, yeah, get given, isn't it, sometimes? And they're like, yeah, you crack on with that over there. But I don't ever want to stop having conversations with those people or having those people around in my life, because actually they challenge me, yeah, to be able to think about things in a completely different way. And I think we spoke with somebody a little while ago who we were saying that we need to get away from this kind of idea that you're having conversations in order to try and change your view.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't be sitting here having a conversation with you because I want to impose my stuff, yeah, on you to get you to change the way that you think. Actually, I should be having this conversation because I can see it as a connection,
yep,
and I can see it as a place for me to be able to grow and to learn from you of where you've got to and where you are, and then take that away and be able to, like, feed that into my life and kind of go, what can I take from that? How, yeah, can I learn from that? And yeah, just expose yourself to like different things, which, yeah, I think we've kind of come away from that. We kind of have conversations with people and before they've even finished their sentence, you have already thought about what you're going to reply to.
Yeah.
And I am a sucker for that, because I still do that. And it's such a bad trait of mine that I get so excited. I'm like, let me get in before yeah, I forget. Let me get in before I forget. And I have, yeah, to really like hold my tongue and try and keep it in. But it's because I get so excited and I kind of, but I think it's a skill, isn't it? Being, yeah, able to listen. Like, your gift is being able to get people to like share their message. But it's also another gift to be able to sit back and listen, mm-hmm, and not interrupt and interject, yeah, and chuck your two pence in.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get that back. I don't know how, I don't know what that looks like nowadays, to be able to go, how do we learn to listen again?
Yeah. I wanted to ask that point, like, how do you get it back? I wonder whether some of it is because we're jumping to try and find like answers and solutions,
yes,
rather than let's just really understand the problem.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of people go wrong in like speaking in general, is because they don't articulate, they don't give a context of what the problem is, yeah, that their solution then, yeah, gives. And so to your point around, yeah, listening, it's like, I really want to hear the problem or what's going on for you or your experience before, oh yeah, and we can do this and this is the solution. Because you're right, listening is a huge gap. And that's why the work that I do is, I always say to people, it's not rocket, it's not complicated. And sometimes I feel, fraud's not the right word, but I feel a bit like a cheat, that all I'm doing is listening to people and or creating the environment where people listen to each other.
Yeah.
Like on the course that you did, it was like you have this time to talk and then the other person gets to respond. But it's groundbreaking in terms of the results that it creates for people. It's just being able to listen. But I think when it comes to the environmental space, we need to get comfortable talking more about the problem. But also, to your point, I agree about it's important to, you know, chat to people who don't agree with you. I guess sometimes the challenge I find with that, though, is creating environments where it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Or not appropriate, but if people don't want to talk about it, then, you know, again, it's imposing your will to say, I want to hear what you think, tell me what you think. And they're like, I don't want to talk about it. And so how do we get people, I don't know, maybe it's kind of poking a little bit to fire people, I don't know, because we need those changes to, if we want to hear other people, they've got to be willing to speak.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't feel that they want to, or they've got anything to add or contribute. Again, they don't think they've got any value in sharing, so it's like us making them aware, no, I really, really am interested and care, and your opinion is valid, even if it conflicts with mine.
And I think that kind of almost comes down to like the real basic thing of relationships. And relationships are not like, they're not built quickly. Relationships take time and they take, you know, a lot of energy and a lot of, you know, a whole load of stuff that's the kind of like long work stuff. Mm. But if we are wanting to help people create change and to open up and feel safe and be able to have conversations and learn from each other, then that takes bit of time.
Yeah.
And we live in a time where I am the worst for this, but I'm like you. I want it now.
Yeah.
Like, I want it now.
Yeah.
I want to sit and wait. Like, I am one of these people. I'm an oversharer. You listen to me and Liz sometimes on any of our recordings, I overshare all the time because I'm just like, bear all.
Yeah.
This is it. But it's going at people's paces, and I think that's something that you're really good at. One of the things I was thinking is our slogan is think global, act local. And I can't say that now without envisioning me standing in that room at KCF at the final thing, because I said it 5 million times that I now just associate it with that. But our slogan, think global, act local, is quite relevant to you because you do an awful lot of local stuff within Kent, don't you?
Yeah.
But I saw that you went and did an amazing thing. Was it in Tunisia?
Yes.
Tell me all. What was you doing?
So it was with a company called, well, they're a non-profit called TUI Care Foundation. And they are closely linked with TUI, but they're not funded by TUI. They're like their own entity that is a charity. And basically, they're kind of doing the sort of stuff that we did on the KCF event. They're basically, well, at a much bigger kind of level, is they fund and they support like projects all around the world that are doing everything from coral restoration and coral adoption to tree planting. But what I really loved about the work they were doing is they do the obvious environmental stuff, but they also massively link it with social, cultural and economic stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time, if they're working in remote regions where there's a lot of poverty, for example, mm-hmm. or there's obviously cultural elements that come into things, then it's all well and good saying, oh, don't litter. But if you're in a place where there's a lot of poverty and therefore they can't afford to buy a reusable thing, or often, you know, in Asia, there's a lot of single use shampoo packets because they can't afford to buy a big bottle. So there's tons of these throwaway tiny little things. You have to take that into account. And so a lot of the work they're doing is factoring in, finding a way to make it support entrepreneurs, for example, so that it's economically viable. But often it also includes giving young people like skills and opportunities and training them. And I just loved that it incorporated all three elements, that it's an absolute no-brainer, rather than a lot of the argument with environmental stuff is it's all well and good, but we need to put food on the table, there's cost of living crisis, there's cultural differences, all these kind of things. And they were just bringing the whole lot together. And that for me is like, that's cool.
And that's a great example of listening, because all of those things and all of those barriers that you just said, like, you couldn't go in with our Western views of going, you know, this is what you need to do, basically.
Yeah.
You need to do this. Because, yeah, you're right. Like, all of those things, you have to take them into account and know about them and learn. So how did you do your homework before you went and you knew some of that stuff? Or was that all new to you? You went there and you just learnt it all while you were there, like the barriers that they're facing?
So a lot of it, I guess, the specific pieces were of the projects that we went. Yeah, that was kind of seeing it come to life. I think I'd been aware of it even in the UK, you know, with so before I did the KCF piece, I did a piece in Folkestone called the Sustainable Futures Forum, and one of our speakers was a lady who runs the Folkestone Youth Project. And so a lot of her thing was, how do we make it like sustainability more inclusive and accessible to people on low incomes? And so it was already there. And I think, you know, having worked on kind of in social enterprise projects locally, it made sense when I started seeing examples where people were bringing it together. But yeah, it wasn't something I'd seen done as well, I guess, when you see it in different countries.
It looked pretty awesome.
It was very cool.
And I was like, check her out. One day she's in Folkestone and the next she's in Tunisia.
I know, it was very exciting. And I might be doing another one, which is even more exciting.
No way. What, in the same country or different?
No, different country. It hasn't been confirmed.
Yeah.
But
it's
somewhere that I've always wanted to go.
But that's really good, because I think you are probably able to learn so much there to bring knowledge here. Think locally, acting globally is kind of,
exactly.
That's, you're living that out, and that makes me so happy. So what's your kind of vision? Do you have a plan of like where you want to go next? Are there any like big dream stuff that you want to do, or are there people that you want to connect with, or what's going on for you?
Well, probably too many, but I guess I'm finally at the stage where I feel like I'm doing what, you know, when you're like the stuff you feel like you were made to, it like just feels right, and getting the confidence to do it. So for me, the future is about a combination between doing more, like continuing the presenting stuff,
yeah,
and being able to go out to amazing places and showcase these amazing places, and knowing that my role in that is to kind of be the guide, like, come on, let's go check out this amazing person that's doing this awesome startup about circular economy, for example. So I get to be this explorer that just explores on camera on behalf of the audience. So I wanted, yeah, more presenting stuff, hopefully kind of bigger projects to showcase to people, like with excitement and enthusiasm, this is cool. And changing, rather than people seeing sustainability as like, oh, I've got to, like,
I wish they could see your face when you did that then.
Stuff that they don't, it's seen as a negative thing, you've got to give up.
Yeah.
Whereas I see it as, why can't it be like, you know, we used to love, do you remember Tomorrow's World?
No, tell me.
Young for it. It was a program, I'm showing my age. A program, it was just, basically it was like new technology and stuff that's going to be coming in the future.
Oh no, I do remember that.
Right? And the gadget show and things like that.
Yeah.
And like, those were staples, and people love gadget. And I'm like, why can't we make a TV show like about sustainability, but not from it's about sustainability. It's like, this is cool tech that's going on. And what's the best, most groundbreaking, different, thinking completely outside the box? Well, it's anything to do with the environment, climate change, because we've got to do things radically different. So why haven't we got more stuff like that? And I have got a couple of, I don't know whether they'll ever happen, but I've got like pipe dream TV shows that I'd love to make. Like a couple of titles are, which are, is Zero Carbon Dating.
Oh my life.
Which is like a dating. So imagine, because Macy, this came about because I was speaking to someone who worked on an environmental project, and there was a potential opportunity to do an environmental show. So we were, and I was chatting about, and in the end, the producer came back saying that the channel haven't gone for it because, you know, it's not fast, and dating shows, which it's not fast, easy, cheap entertainment.
Right.
And so we were chatting, we were like, oh, what we need to do is like have a dating show that's about the environment. And I was like, oh my God, that's a great idea. So Zero Carbon Dating.
How would that work?
So basically the idea is that it'd be like, is it First Dates?
Yeah.
No, First Dates, yes, First Dates.
Yeah.
Or any of dating. But basically, so they're getting ready, but you have a carbon budget. So you're rationed on how much carbon you could use. So imagine it as say for example, there's a girl and she's getting ready and she's using the hairdryer. She's got all this kind of like, you know, not particularly good makeup. She gets a taxi to her date, and then she gets to her date and realizes she's run out of credits, and therefore she can't have the steak. She has to eat crickets. And therefore you've got the interaction of this person that, you know, is your stereotypical Love Island having tweet cricket. So then it becomes a little bit like...
How did they not snap this up?
Well, I didn't have that idea at the time. Oh, okay. It developed as a result of it. But then equally you could have someone who's turned up, you know, looking a bit like a drowned rat because they've come in on their bike to be sustainable, but then they get to eat the steak and have all the amazing food.
Oh my God.
And you have like, is it the guy who does Come Dine With Me? Like, yeah. You have someone like him narrating
it. Oh, I love him.
In a really kind of like lightly taking the mic.
Yeah.
Type thing.
Oh my gosh. Right. This needs to happen.
I know.
I would watch this.
It's so much
this.
Fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I absolutely would. You'd be like, what's her name? Cilla Black. Do you remember Cilla Black?
I do remember Cilla Black.
Day. What did she used to say? What was her catchphrase?
I can't do the accent.
It's going to really annoy me.
The people are going to be shouting it at their
radios, gosh, but... that needs to happen. Yeah. So that's in your brain. What else is in your brain?
So I've always wanted to basically be Challenge Annika.
No, I've got that. No, 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 no. We'll have to fight over that.
Okay, we'll fight
that
over Challenge Annika.
That's always been my dream.
That adds another layer. Maybe it's like multiple Challenge Annikas and we're all dressed up in yellow, you know, jumpsuits.
Oh
anyway, I'm getting carried away. Do you remember in Top Gear did an episode where they tried to basically fix a road that was going to take 6 weeks to get repaired? And it was, again, taking the mic, like, it doesn't have to take 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So they tried to do it in 48 hours.
Yeah.
And of course it all went wrong, but they got a lot. They were like, look, we couldn't do it in 48 hours, but we could probably do it in like 5 days.
Yeah.
So challenging the stereotype of how long stuff takes. So the other one is like a kind of a challenge net zero type thing where you're like, right, rather than it taking 5 years to get to your net zero target, let's do it in 5 days. And you go to a community group or something and you convert their building quickly. And it's very much like you use local people to kind of get on board and like, right, we need to do this in 5 days. And
gosh,
that kind of stuff.
Honestly, we need contacts. This podcast needs to go out to like all of the local news people to go, this needs to be a show.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It'd be so fun, wouldn't it?
I would love to live in your brain for a day.
But the problem is stuff like this is so hard to make. So I get all excited about it. And then how do you actually get it out there is the other thing. You know, I guess I'm working in a social media kind of space rather than a TV. You never know.
So Cilla Black and good old Annika. What was that surname? Annika?
Rice.
Annika Rice. Yeah. She is a
And Louis Theroux as well. We'll put in like a mix between Louis Theroux and Challenge Annika.
Have you seen his latest?
No.
No, neither have I. But I have got that on my to-do list to watch his newest thing. He is a bit of a ledge, isn't he?
Yeah.
Who's like your hero?
Mm.
I mean, you can pick either of those three, but like out of like...
Really say Cilla Black is my hero, my mind's gone from Cilla Black to at the same time, at that same age, was like gladiators. So when I was like 8, it was being a gladiator. But anyway, probably, I guess the person I, you know, when people say like, who would you have to a dinner party? I always thought Bruce Parry was really good.
Who's that?
Slightly less well known, but he did Tribe. So it was a show around the similar sort of time. But basically, he went to remote tribes and like lived with them and did all their like verticommas weird rituals, like where they kind of lick a frog and it makes you hallucinate and things like that. But I read his book as well, and he's just one of those people that fully immerses himself in the culture and just like doesn't hold back and is, you know, if they're living naked, then he'll do that. And so, but he does a lot of environmental stuff now, obviously from, you know, protecting indigenous tribes. And I haven't followed his journey since, but I remember reading his book and I see a few bits every now and again on social media. But so probably him.
So you'd have him for dinner?
Yeah.
Feed him crickets.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd love it. Do you want me to set you up with someone?
Yeah.
On a date. I've loved today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming and chatting. And I honestly now want to see if we can push all of these ideas out.
Yes.
Because I now want to see what else is in your brain to see what comes out.
I know, that's the thing. I need to get these ones out because then it creates space for new ones.
I was going to say, do you? Because my brain's like that. Something was sitting there and I'm like, well, I need to push that out to get another one in.
Yes. Yeah. I guess this is a learning from like talking about sharing ideas and seeing the value is kind of being able to also though have those ideas in your head and then find them and keep throwing them out.
Yeah.
And not be offended if they come back and it doesn't go anywhere, but just know at the right time it will land, but it evolves and it develops in the process of it as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Well, you were saying like, oh, you didn't have that idea until after the thought, because it kind of grows and takes on a different life and you go, oh, that's actually even better than when I first thought of it. Yeah.
And the Sustainable Challenge Annika one, I'm now thinking a little bit like a Where's Wally, but we're all dressed up, like there's a whole gang of us dressed up as Annika Rice, and we've all got our own challenges, and it's like a competition, not only to complete it in time, but between us. I mean, it's developed just in this conversation.
Oh my
right?
gosh.
We find all the Challenge Annikas in every county, and they all have to compete on who can reduce their, I don't know, their community's carbon within that, 5 days or something.
But and that wouldn't be hard, you know. I think the thing that you probably find in your work is that there are so many people, isn't there, that are doing some really, really like deep impactful work, and yeah. also people that don't even realise that they are those people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There'll be loads of people listening that are like, oh yeah, I know somebody that's like that, and you're like, no, it's probably you. Yeah. It's probably
yeah.
you.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, when you're the connector, the people between, you're always thinking about other people, aren't you? Whereas like you're the one that everyone else is thinking of, which is what you are.
I love connecting. I think even I have to stop my brain from doing this because it's a little bit weird and a little bit creepy. But I see things on social media and I'm like, this person who is like so, so famous, so big, needs to connect with this person over here. And then I end up like sending a message going, by the way, you need to speak to this person. Like, it's little old me and Kent. Like, they don't even. But there is one that I have discovered this week. So, you know, the Timpson guy, James Timpson.
Yes.
He has just taken over the role for prisons. He's the prisons minister. And I have followed his journey in like podcasts and stuff, and he's like amazing person with lived experience of the prison system and how he manages his business, the Timpson key cutting thing. Yeah. If you've not heard of his story, go listen. It is so inspiring, really, really good. And there's a guy called Cormac Russell who is all about connected communities and being able to enable grassroots action and kind of all that sort of stuff. And those two people need to meet.
Yeah.
It needs to happen. And I always see it everywhere I go. I'm like, you need to meet this person. But I need to kind of rein it in a bit because it's just weird going up to someone and being like, see you, mate. You have no idea who I am, but you need to speak to this person over here. But thank you so very much. I've like loved, and I'd love to have you back when Liz is here because she will have 5 million questions for you.
We'll be here for 5 hours, so that's the only problem.
But thank you so much, and I will drop a link to all of your wonderful work and your socials so that people can follow up and see what you're doing.
Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of the Tread Lightly podcast. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and maybe, like Hayley and myself, even picked up a new perspective along the way.
If you did, do not keep it to yourself. You need to give us a like, rate the podcast and share it with somebody who needs to hear it. And of course, follow us on all of our social media, which is hilarious because we are on LinkedIn, TikTok, oh my gosh, Facebook and Instagram. And you can also stay in the loop for more episodes and updates. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep treading lightly.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.